G'day folks, and welcome to Stick With It, APA's new podcast for our pilots. This is a new initiative coming to you from the Communications and Membership Engagement team, and we aim to use it as a convenient way to provide you with information that will make your life as a pilot easier. APA is mindful that the knowledge and awareness on all things FRMS can be improved, particularly after the stand-down period and subsequent restart. So we thought it was timely to provide a variety of educational tools relating to FRMS. We begin that journey with our first ever podcast. Joining me today for a chat about all things FRMS are our resident APA experts on the subject, Captains Shane Loney and Greg Pavlow. Welcome.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark, everybody.
Now, can I start by acknowledging that the level of understanding of FRMS within our membership is quite varied. So today we will try to deliver an FRMS for Dummies style of chat, including information for our members about how they can contribute to the FRMS rule set through active reporting. So can I start by asking, what is the fatigue risk management system and how does it differ from the traditional CAO rule set?
So as you said, Mark, it is a fatigue risk management system. That means it's supposed to be an evolving system. The traditional CAO that we're all familiar with was purely prescriptive, wasn't built to meet any particular kind of airline or other operation. You know, it was just somebody's best guess. And in the example of the standard industry exemptions, it wasn't a really good guess. So what is different here? An FRMS, I say it's in two parts. So we have the system part. That is your reports. When they're submitted, where do they go? How do they get acted on? Who is responsible for ensuring that action is taken? So that's the system, if you like, and that's largely covered in your FRMS manual. But then we get to the nuts and bolts of it, the bit that matters to the average pilot, and that's your rule set. So that is what you're familiar with in the past with CAOs. You know, it talks about what you can and can't do under certain circumstances. I said before that one of the key things is an evolving system. So what should be happening is a pilot submits a report. That is going to go through the safety system. It will be delivered to the FSAG. It'll be discussed. A single report, yeah, maybe it was a one-off type scenario, but we start seeing multiple reports. The FSAG's job is then to react to that, to encourage change, to make improvements to our system. Now, sometimes that might mean that we can do a little bit more flying than we used to do in particular circumstances. That might be good for the business. But other times, it might mean we've got to look a whole bunch closer because the fatigue risk is considered excessive. Your reports drive that. That's the evolutionary part. It is not a static thing. It will change based on our experiences.
Great. And we'll talk more about that later on, about how our pilots can submit fatigue reports. So in terms of, I understand that the FMS rule set operates in long haul and short haul is slightly different. Can you guys explain to us what those differences are?
The differences between the two are largely down to the differences that existed when the FRMS was created, but the process behind how improvements occur is the same in both short haul and long haul.
Okay.
So what I'd add to Greg's comments there is the system part, as Greg says, is exactly the same. There is no change for what happens short haul, long haul. The rule set is different, because we started in different places. I mentioned earlier about the standard industry exemption. That has a lot to do with the EA. So when your EA looks different and the way Qantas went about this setting up an FRMS, it was to come up with planning rules, and those planning rules were largely the way we worked under our EA, because that's how our operations get planned ordinarily. The CAO always rode above EA limits, meaning that you had to plan an operation, but when circumstances required and it was safe to do so, you could extend to the CAO limits. Well, those CAO limits became our operational limits, but the way it works is just the same. We always had our EA and we always had the CAOs. Well, now we have planning limits and operational limits. It's just a matter of how do we get between planning and operational. Again, that's identical in the system aspects. The rules will look different between short and long haul because of where they came from.
Now, in terms of, I guess, the practicalities for our pilots is what sort of obligations do they have under FRMS compared to maybe what they're used to? And if there are additional obligations, can you explain what they are?
I think complying with the legislation, that requirement remains the same. Now, how you comply with legislation under an FRMS is slightly different in that the FRMS is continually evolving. So unlike perhaps the prescriptive rule sets we had previously where they didn't change and you knew what they were, with the FRMS, you need to make sure that you stay up to date with any changes within the FRMS as the FRMS changes.
So I'd say that we don't really have major differences in obligations. There's some that are important. I'll cover that shortly. But as Greg says, it's the regulation. It's the law, the same way as the CAO's 48 used to be. Pilots understood that we put ourselves in some peril if we chose not to comply with the CAO limits. It's exactly the same. Remember that this is an FRMS, but an FRMS happens under CAO 48.1. It is still the CAO. It is still your legal limit. So be very sure that you take the significance of that. You have an obligation to comply with the law. That is in the company's interest. It's also in your personal interest. If you fail to comply with the law, then there could be consequences for you. There have been occasions in the past where CASA have, to use their words, actively considered taking the licence away from pilots for failing to comply with CAOs and CAO 48 in particular. So be very careful. You have a very clear obligation. That hasn't changed, but understand the obligation, and that is both planning limits and operational limits. They are all law. There is another part that I will add, though, for an obligation, and this is the fundamental thing about FRMS. We told you what that was before, but what it's the holistic idea is that it's science-based, data-driven, and it is formed and evolves through your operational experience. The data-driven part is really important. Where does the data come from? From a large part, it comes from you, the pilots, submitting reports about what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly. You submit those reports. That is the data that enables the system to evolve.
So in terms of then the obligations and then the best place to get the information about FRMS, I'm assuming for pilots we go to DocuNet. So we go into the fatigue tab, and then underneath that there are a bunch of documents. So in that list of documents, which are the best documents that our pilots are going to get their timely information from?
The two most important documents I would say within DocuNet is the FRMS manual and the rule set. The FRMS manual because it explains how the system works. And I think it's important pilots understand how the system works so that they can most effectively provide feedback back into the system.
So is it fair to say the FRMS manual is bedtime reading, that you maybe chip away at that one and get that covered, but there's an FRMS rule set document for the 7.3, so for short haul ops.
That's correct.
And then there's one for 7.8, 3.30 and 3.80 ops, which is the long haul one. So they're the two that they really need to be going to.
Yeah, the rule set is your bread and butter. Now, if you do have questions, there's two scenarios. The first one, if you've got a general question about the FRMS rule set that you're sitting at home, you want to get an answer to, you can send an email through to us here at APA or give us a call and we can answer your question. If, however, you are about to sign on, or you're in a time-compressed situation where you need an answer to a question about the FRMS, the best people to ring are the APA schedulers. It's a 24-hour number, and they can provide you with advice on whether the proposed operation fits within the rule set. If they can't answer the question, they can quickly get onto resources that can provide them the answer to that question.
Cool. So that means, my understanding is that if it's more of a long-term, non-urgent issue, if they send an email to frms@apa.org.au, and if they need to talk to our schedulers, Bob and Dave, the hotline number is 028 307 7711, and they can provide you with some timely information or they can get it for you. It feels like to me, Shane, that obviously if people go through that process, they are making a fair and reasonable attempt to inform themselves of their obligations before they go to work.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark, and I think that's critical. In so much that we do in our jobs in the aeroplane, we rely on information from other people, but we know that ultimately we're the decision makers and the responsibility sits with us. So this is the same. If you are acting responsibly, that means seeking the information so you can be reasonably confident that what you're doing is appropriate, and that can be, depending on how much time you've got at your hands, scheduling, as Greg says, first instance, we've got Bob and Dave. But I'd also add that spend time in the rule sets. Be familiar with the layout and where to go, because oftentimes you might not really need to spend up to 2 hours sitting on a phone trying to get through to scheduling. Bob and Dave will answer nice and quickly, but you might get your answer straight out of the rule set to say you're exceeding the operational limits. Now you're having a different conversation with scheduling because it's clearly written in there. Yeah, sorry, scheduling, this doesn't add up. You can't do that if you're not familiar with the rule sets. So spend some time, get used to it, then you know that you've been sold a pup.
It feels like you almost need to treat the rule set document like a QRH in terms of go and familiarise yourself with the document so that then if push comes to shove and you need to access it quickly, you have a working knowledge of at least where to find the information in the document.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of stuff in those documents, no denying it. But, you know, there's a couple of tables that we're all familiar with because those tables largely came out of our EAs or the CAO. We're familiar with that because we've used them in the past. It's the same format. So that's the go-to places. Now you can get some issues. Is this a planning rule that we're following or an operational rule? Now that can get a little bit trickier sometimes. Sometimes it's easy when you've had a problem with your aeroplane, and so it's taking the maintainers, it can take an hour and a half to fix it. We're all familiar with that scenario. Some of the others are a little trickier. So be familiar for long haul, FD 3.3. That's where it talks about operation, how we go from planning to operational limits. So you know, you need to be familiar with both. You need to know how you get there. And like Greg says, you don't hesitate to call APA scheduling or crewing to make sure you understand what the issue is.
Okay.
Greg? I'd just like to add to that too. One of the other advantages of getting in contact with APA, if you do have an issue that you resolve or something that you want to bring to our attention, if you send us an email or give us a call, we can add that to our database of knowledge, and where we get multiple reports about a area of the FRMS that pilots perhaps don't understand as well as they should, we can take that through our FSAG representatives to the company and have that addressed and have some education pieces put out about those particular areas of the rule set.
Just other thing on obligation I'd like to remind, we all know this, but that is an obligation to not operate fatigued, or if you think you are likely to become fatigued. We've all been in the position where you feel the pressure to not desert all your passengers, but we have to remind ourselves again, we are obliged under law to not fly in a fatigued state. That is just the same now as it has ever been. It is in law recognised that it is a mutual obligation. The business, the company has an operation, but so do we as pilots.
Now, I've heard the phrase being used with the FRMS that it's both a proactive system and a reactive system. Now, we'll talk in a minute about the reactive system from a reporting perspective, but what does it mean when they talk about it from a proactive position?
There are three elements to the FRMS. There is the predictive element, the proactive element, and the reactive element. The predictive element is where the company uses things like biomathematical models to have a look at proposed rosters and duties to make sure that the fatigue outcomes don't exceed a certain threshold. There is the proactive element, which is where the company goes out and seeks out information to verify their rule set to make sure that the fatigue outcomes are what they expect from their predictive modelling. And then there is the reactive element, which is where the pilots will submit reports to the company about fatigue outcomes or concerns that they have. Now, the proactive and the reactive elements are probably the ones that pilots will come across them the most frequently. So in the case of where we've started new operations, for example, Brisbane LACS, as part of that, the company will need to survey the pilots. They will need to collect data on fatigue outcomes through various apps and make sure that the rule sets that they have introduced provide the fatigue outcome that they expect. The reactive element is where pilots can really have an effect on the rule sets, and by submitting reports and providing feedback to the company, can actually affect the outcome of the rule sets and require the company to address any problems that they might highlight.
Greg mentioned Brisbane Lakes and studies. Those aren't obligatory. The pilot will be asked, be invited to take part in study. Now, some of you might say things like, nah, it's going to be inconvenient, who's going to care anyway? Well, don't do that. We've said it's data-driven. We've started a new operation here with Brisbane Lakes. We've got Class 1 and a Class 2 rest. We haven't done that before. So the information that comes from pilots and how they find it, that could be good. It could be bad. It could be ugly. But without the pilot reports, we won't know. So if you're doing one of those trips, you're asked to be part of the study. Please don't shirk that responsibility. You are doing your bit to shape the system to make sure that we manage fatigue risks. So very, very important. Buy into the system. Be engaged with it.
I was just going to add to Shane's comments as well. Those reports that you do provide are de-identified. So when they do go to the FSAG or when they are included into the final report, individuals are not identified. So you can feel free to be completely honest with your responses in the knowledge that that information is not spread widely throughout the company.
And in terms of scenarios, are there some examples on pilots like practicality or practical examples? So are there some that you can give us that demonstrates sort of some of the issues that we're talking about today?
Sure. Yeah, at the simple end, like we touched on before, you're downline and you get the note under the door or the email these days. That's pretty straightforward. You look at that and say, you know, is this within the operational limits? That's all good. That's a simple one. We've all dealt with that. We've dealt with the turning up of the aeroplane and it's broken. Those are simple. Sometimes it gets more complicated. An example might be you're downline planning to do a four-pilot operation and something happens with one of those pilots and you're told by crewing, or you're asked by crewing, will you do this three-pilot? You might be told as well, and then that could be a different argument, but regardless, you go through the same steps. So you've got to look at that yourself and say, from a fatigue perspective, do I think I can conduct that operation safely? Because if you don't think you can, then it's really simple. Remember the obligation we talked about before. You must say, no, I cannot do that, if you don't think you can do it safely from a fatigue perspective. So let's say you've done that and you think, it's all right, it's going to be tough, but I can do that. So now is it legal? So you're in a downline port. You haven't started your duty. You're in your hotel room and the email comes in. So is that okay? Firstly, you go and look at the rules. And this is where you get into, for long haul, FD 3.3, how you get across. Because there are different scenarios. You know, before you've departed a home base, when you are in a slip port, you need to be reasonably comfortable that it is fitting the laws. You might need clarification of that. And you might find that scheduling have put in that we're doing it, and your email said we're doing this under FD 3.3.3. Go and have a read of that particular clause in your rule set and say, does that fit the situation that I find myself in? If you're not sure, get on to crewing and say, I don't understand how you could have used this rule. Now, somebody in crewing might have made a mistake. And if we go back earlier, we talked about protecting yourself. You are taking steps to ensure that what you are doing is reasonable. So you ask those kind of questions, go back to Bob and Dave. But do not just accept duties. If you think you'll be fatigued, you say no. If you cannot see how that fits to the rules that we are obligated to fly under, do not do it until you have satisfied yourself that it is safe and reasonable to do so.
Very good advice. So if you've gone and flown a pattern or a sector and you're concerned about the fatigue impact of that trip, we now move in, I guess, to that all-important area of reporting. If we keep it really basic to start with, where do people go to submit a fatigue report?
The best way to submit a report is through the company's Intellex system. If you have a look at your iPad, there is an Intellex app. Once you log in, down the bottom, there's a large box that says fatigue report. If you click on that fatigue report, then you'll be able to fill out the form and provide the information regarding the pattern.
Okay, so it is different to pilot report. It's important, I think, we make that point that it's a specific fatigue report. And as you alluded to earlier, I'm assuming by selecting fatigue report, that will then de-identify the report, or is it not de-identified at that point?
Well, the process is it will go to, it won't be de-identified in the first instance when you report it, because your base manager may ring you to seek further information about your report. It's certainly, if you go fatigued, you will expect to get a phone call from your base manager. So the company will know the person who submitted that report. Where it gets de-identified is where it moves through the system and perhaps goes to FSAG, which is the advisory group. They will get the details of the report, but they won't know who submitted it.
Okay, and we'll talk about FSAG in a minute. Sorry, Shane, you were going to say something.
Yeah, just one point that people sometimes aren't aware of or lose sight of. Yes, as Greg says, there's fatigue report, but you don't actually have to have gone fatigued to submit that report. You may decide that I am unfit due fatigue and you're going to submit that form. You might complete the duty. And on hindsight, you look back and say, man, I was wrecked at the end of that. I don't think that was a good pattern. Put in a report. The fact that you've completed it doesn't mean that it wasn't fatiguing. So please don't.
So it can be preemptive or it can be at the end. You could even potentially as well. I mean, one scenario I've thought about is you go to Johannesburg and then you've got a couple of days off. Then you go to Dallas, a couple of days off, and then you go back to Johannesburg. You might at the end of that three-trip sort of situation just go, that's not safe.
Correct. So it might be about the overall pattern, not about individual flights or even individual patterns, how they all fit together. That's still definitely worth putting reports. And we've changed through FSAG. We have changed some of those trips. We were doing that at one stage where you go to Johannesburg, to Santiago, and then be going back to Johannesburg on your next trip. Not surprisingly, pilots found that really fatiguing. That got stopped. Why? Because we got reports from pilots telling us that it was a problem.
And can I just add further to that? Fatigue reports aren't just about post-duty. If you receive a roster, you get your roster published and you look at your roster and you think, well, hang on a minute, that roster looks pretty fatiguing. I've got concerns about the way the patterns interact together. You can also submit a roster review and have the company look at your roster and point out the fatigue issues in a roster. So you don't have to wait till you personally have a fatigue outcome. You can do it before you operate the patterns as well.
Okay. Now, one of the challenges that I think we all admit to as pilots is the notion of, will my report be taken seriously or does it just, you know, end up in the ether? So once a pilot submits a fatigue report via Intellex, what happens to it?
So it goes through QGSS, the Qantas Group Safety System. It'll be analysed there and kind of like it's triaged at that point and goes through to the various parties that might need to know about it. In due course, it comes down to your FSAG reps, that's the Fatigue Safety Action Group. That is made up of people from all the relevant parts of the business, including crewing and allocations, management, but also pilot representatives. There are pilot representatives from each fleet. They are people that have got knowledge, they've got experience, they've been around this for some time. Many of them are involved in human factors and such like. So people who understand the issues. So in due course, your report is going to find its way to the FSAG reps, where we will be looking at it closely and say, hang on, this one's raising some flags for me. Or it might be, this is the sixth similar report we've seen about a particular operation. We need to do something. One report might not do it. You go and talk to management and they're going to say, well, bar talk doesn't really do it for us, but now you've got reports. Now you can turn up and say, look at this, sixth report. We might have an issue here. So the FSAG, if it hasn't been driven by anybody else beforehand, your FSAG reps will drive that issue and seek to make change. This is what we talked about, the evolutionary nature of your FSAG. It's not static. As you report, we react to it. The system should react to it and generate improvements in the way we do things.
So how often does the FSAG meet?
Meets every month. And obviously there's emails backwards and forwards as well. But yeah, it meets once a month where we look at all of what's called SPIs, the safety performance indicators. So they're tracking all kinds of metrics about our operation. You know, are we flying most of our operations as planned? If we had a situation where the average planning was supposed to be 9 hours, and we find, look at this, that we've got all of these trips doing 10 hours. Why has that happened? You know, have we had particular weather events, or is the planning overly optimistic? In which case, we've got to go back and say, yeah, we've got to look at this differently. So you have all of that kind of data, plus your reports that we analyse, discuss, argue over at FSAG meetings. In that FSAG, you also have two APRA representatives. So your association is there actively engaged and looking after your interest.
And is it fair to say at the moment the mainline pilot body are active in fatigue reporting?
Not as active as we'd like them to be. I understand, and I've heard it before, probably said it myself prior to being involved as I currently am, and that is that what's the good of reporting? Nothing ever happens. Now, I understand, I've had the responses back to my reports as well that might say something like, you know, it's saved for recording purposes or whatever. That might look to you like nothing is happening. But as I said before, management aren't reacting to bar talk. They have to react to your reports. So we don't get as much as we need, and without those reports, we cannot drive the change that we need.
And if I can just add to that, if you do have concerns that you've submitted a report and you're not quite sure what the outcome of that report is, we do have the two FSAG reps from APRA. So if you give us a call or you send us an email, we can follow up any concerns you have about a report that you've submitted if you haven't received a response or an adequate response. And our FSAG reps are there to pursue members' interests.
So my understanding is if a crew member submits an Intellex report, they will then receive an email as a consequence of submitting that report to their Qantas email. And then what we are encouraging them to do is to then forward that email report to APRA at frms@apra.org.au. And what's the benefit of doing that, Shane?
As I mentioned before, at the FSAG, we meet once a month. We usually only receive the quite detailed package the day before. So reports that might have come in might be a month old by the time we see it. If a pilot has had it, particularly on a significant issue, the sooner APRA knows about it, the sooner we can start trying to drive change. So the key element really is if we're going to react in a timely fashion, we need to know more quickly. Contacting us directly will achieve that.
And then, as I said, if there's any general questions relating to FRMS, if people want to learn more or they've just got a generic question, again, I'm assuming the frms@apra.org.au is the best place to contact you guys?
That's the best place to contact us in the first instance, and then one of the team will get back to the member and answer their particular inquiries or concerns.
And is there anything, just before we wrap up today's podcast, any sort of last messages that you both wanted to put out to our members?
Yeah, I would like to say that irrespective of what's in any of the EAs or the FRMS rule sets, if you're not fit to operate, call in fatigued. You do not need to operate to the limits that are in the EAs before you can call in fatigued. You can call in fatigued at any time, and there will be no repercussions on you for calling fatigued. If you do have any concerns, you can give us a call here and we can provide some support.
Shane?
So I'd say understand how your rule sets work. That means have some familiarity with the document. Know where to go when you're exposed to one of these unusual situations. Understand how your EA fits with the FRMS rules. The rule sets are your flight and duty limits as per the CAAs. Your EA is your industrial obligations. In some places, you can have situations where the FRMS allows you to conduct operations a little differently to your EA, but you have the right to stick to your EA entitlements if you choose to. You don't have to, but if you choose to, you can stick to your EA entitlements. But don't confuse that with the FRMS rules. They are the law and you must comply with it. Protect yourself, protect the airline by making sure that you don't knowingly go out and conduct operations. You must look after yourself and your livelihood. You do that by being proactive and aware.
And ultimately, I think it comes back to as well, reporting will drive the FRMS. So if our members can make it just a part of their habit to start reporting, I notice as well the Intellex, you know, you can do it offline, so you can do it while you're sitting in the air if it's appropriate, and then you can submit it once you've got Wi-Fi on the ground. Thank you to both of you. I hope this podcast has provided some useful information to our members about FRMS. APA will continue to provide tips, tools and tricks to help you help us to drive a strong reporting culture. Now, we encourage you to share this podcast with your fellow APA members, and we look forward to bringing you more episodes in the near future. Until next time, fly safe and stick with it.